Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Public Land and Hovercraft Highway Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On March 26, 2019, the Supreme Court decided Sturgeon v. Frost, a case considering whether the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act prohibits the National Park Service from exercising regulatory control over state, native corporation, and private land physically located within the boundaries of the national park system in Alaska. Congress, through the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, created 10 new national parks, monuments, and preserves with 104 million acres of federally owned land. When selecting the boundary lines, Congress chose to use the natural features of the land rather than strictly the federally owned land. The state, private, and native lands within the boundary lines became inholdings, totaling 18 million acres. To protect the landowners, Congress included Section 103C, which, in part, states that only federally owned lands within a conservation reserve unit were to be considered a part of the unit and that no state or private land is subject to regulations pertaining to federal land within the unit. Petitioner John Sturgeon, a hunter, had been using a hovercraft to navigate up a portion of the Nation River that runs through the Yukon Charley Preserve, a conservation unit in Alaska. The National Park Service informed Sturgeon of a regulation prohibiting the operation of a hovercraft on navigable waters within the boundaries of any national park, regardless of inholdings. Sturgeon sought an injunction against the National Park Service, arguing that the land he was using was owned by the state of Alaska and that the National Park Service had no authority to enforce its hovercraft ban there. After an initial round of litigation resulting in a remand by the Supreme Court for further consideration, the district court again ruled against Sturgeon, interpreting Section 103C to limit the National Park Service's authority to impose Alaska-specific regulations on property inholdings, but not its authority to enforce nationwide regulations such as the hovercraft rule. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit affirmed, but the Supreme Court again granted cert and rejected that interpretation as implausible, directing the Ninth Circuit on remand to consider whether the Nation River qualifies as public land, thereby subjecting it to the National Park Service's authority, and if not, whether some other theory afforded the National Park Service regulatory power over the river in question. The Ninth Circuit found that the Nation River did qualify as public land, ruling against Sturgeon yet again. For the third time, the Supreme Court granted cert to review the court's judgment. By a vote of 9-0, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court unanimously held that the Nation River is not public land for purposes of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. And, like all non-public lands and navigable waters within Alaska's national parks, is exempt under Section 103C from the National Park Service's ordinary regulatory authority. A concurring opinion was filed by Justice Sotomayor, in which Justice Ginsburg joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have Tony Francois, Senior Attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation.
This case was decided by the Supreme Court. I want to provide a brief background to the controversy in the case. By the first line of everybody's favorite old joke, a man walks into a bar. Only in this case, it's a sandbar that he walks into. He had intended to hover past the bar or the sandbar, but when his hovercraft required repairs, he had to walk it onto a sandbar as he happened to be traveling up Alaska's Nation River to his moose hunting grounds in a remote and largely roadless area of Alaska. This, of course, is John Sturgeon, who is the plaintiff in this case. On that sandbar in the middle of the Nation River, which happens to be within the boundaries of the National Park Service's Yukon Charley Rivers National Preserve, Mr. Sturgeon was greeted by three U.S. Park Service officials who threatened to jail him if he kept hovering on the rivers in their park with his hovercraft. That's where his ordeal by litigation began with the federal government. This encounter occurred 12 years ago. The case has been proceeding since then and has included two Supreme Court appearances And this is all about John Sturgeon's moose hunting and his history for over four decades of hunting in very remote parts of Alaska, frequently getting to his hunting grounds and back through the use of a hovercraft, which in many areas of Alaska that are roadless and very rugged can be the only practical means of local transportation. And so he would use the hovercraft up and down many of the state's rivers, including those that transit the national parks and national forests that the federal government has carved out of Alaska. The Park Service, through nationwide regulations, prohibits hovercraft on any waters in the parks and argued to Mr. Sturgeon that this applies in Alaska as well as it does anywhere else in the country. He objected, wisely, I would say, that the navigable rivers that pass through national parks are not actually part of the parks. While this may seem initially counterintuitive, he's correct. Under federal law, the state in which the park is located owns the beds of these navigable rivers and also has sovereignty over the water rights and other uses of those rivers. Federal land use regulations may apply on federal land, Sturgeon argues, but not the state-owned riverbeds or state-controlled rivers. And under a statute which applies only in Alaska, the Alaska National Interest Conservation Lands Act, the Park Service can only regulate public lands. If the Nation River, or at least the surface of it, is not federally regulated public land, then John Sturgeon and hunters and others like him are free of Park Service edicts against the use of hovercraft on those rivers. So Sturgeon filed a lawsuit to establish his right to hover on the river, which the Park Service naturally contested. The state of Alaska, which naturally wants to protect its sovereign interests as the owner of the bed of the Nation River and others like it, as well as its sovereign interests over the river's water rights and use, joined the case in support of Sturgeon. And I'm proud to mention that they got a little help along the way through friend of the court briefs from Pacific Legal Foundation. Sturgeon's case dragged on for more than a decade, in which the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals twice rejected his claims, but which court was in turn twice reversed by the Supreme Court, including a final decision in the case this morning. Today's decision fully resolved the case in Sturgeon's favor. The court held that the Nation River is not public land as defined within the Alaska National Interest Conservation Lands Act, or ANILCA, and is therefore under a special provision of that act, not subject to Park Service regulation as what are called inholdings, private property within park or national forest boundaries in the rest of the country, are said to be or claimed to be by the federal government subject to federal regulation by virtue of being surrounded by a federal reservation like a park. And since the Nation River, or at least its surface, is not public land, then in Justice Kagan's very endearing line for the court in its unanimous opinion, quote, John Sturgeon can once again drive his hovercraft up that river to Moose Meadows and resume his hunting. So taking a brief look at the decision itself, I would characterize it as a very positive decision for both private property owners and states in their relation with the federal government in a couple of areas. First of all, the court did, I think, some very sound statutory construction in determining whether or not in the facts of this case, the river itself is public lands. A little bit counterintuitively, the statute defines public lands to include interests in water. And so even though it says lands, it could include water resources as public lands. And then the statute limits the Park Service's regulatory authority just to those public lands. And the court looked closely at what this interest in water could include and came to the decision, which appears to be a fairly common sense one, that it's not possible for the federal government to own an interest in the water itself, which is what Mr. Sturgeon is operating his hovercraft on. It's the actual water column. And that any interest in that water body would be in the nature of a water right. In this case, that water right would be, if the federal government holds it, for the purpose of preventing pollution or depletion and diversion of that river. And none of those interests are actually impaired by navigating on a river. And so the court concluded that the federal government doesn't hold the interest that would prevent Mr. Sturgeon from navigating on the surface of the water. And while this case has the very interesting fact of the use of a hovercraft in it, and it's the hovercraft that's regulated by Park Service regulations, the decision doesn't really turn on whether or not he uses a hovercraft or a canoe or a powered boat. It boils down to the federal government does not have an interest in the use of the surface of the river. And this is good because it pushes back on, or good in my opinion, pushes back on the government's far more expansive argument in the case that because it had statutory interest in conservation and preservation of all the water resources within the national parks, it can basically do whatever it wants, even if it doesn't own the water resources. Now, the second thing that the court does is it clarifies a very important bit of, you could call it federal common law, called the Winters Doctrine. What the Ninth Circuit had held is that even if the Park Service doesn't have the statutory authority to regulate operation of craft on the river, the federal government has, under what's called the Winters Doctrine, an implied reserved water right in the river that would allow it to regulate it completely separate from the statute, essentially as federal property over which the federal government has plenary authority under the property clause of the Constitution. Very similarly to the way that the court concluded that the agency did not have an interest in the surface of the water itself that would can make that water service public land under the statute, the court concluded that even if the federal government does have an implied reserved water right under the Winters Doctrine, that right is limited by prior Supreme Court decisions to the amount that is strictly necessary to achieve the primary purposes for the park. And since those purposes are achieved by preventing diversion of the waters and preventing pollution of them, the right, if it exists, does not extend to preventing people from actually navigating on the river. This was important because the Ninth Circuit has taken a very expansive view of the Winters Doctrine in a couple of ways. First of all, it has been very generous in essentially allowing federal agencies claiming Winters rights to sort of leave them unquantified and leave their quantification at agency discretion, rather than employing the Supreme Court's requirement that the right be strictly quantified and limited to the primary purposes of the reservation. Now, the other interesting aspect of the Ninth Circuit's Winters Doctrine jurisprudence, which was raised in this case but not ultimately decided by the court, is that the Winters Doctrine requires that the act which reserves the land, the statute and any executive action executing that statute, clearly require a reserved water right in order to fulfill the primary purposes of the act. The Ninth Circuit, though, has said that it will employ Chevron deference and defer to an agency's interpretation of the of its enabling statute to determine whether or not that statute authorizes or creates an implied reserve right. And those who follow the controversies surrounding Chevron deference should spot immediately that Chevron deference is only employed when the statute is ambiguous. And yet the Supreme Court has frequently said that for implied water right, the statute has to be clear. And so the Supreme Court's decision today in limiting the scope of any implied right that the Park Service may have in these rivers in Alaska, I think implicitly pushes back on the way the Ninth Circuit has employed the analytical factors under the Winters Doctrine. So at the end of the day, after 12 years of litigation, John Sturgeon and others like him are free to, again, as Justice Kagan says, rev up their hovercraft and head out into the wilds in search of moose and other wild game. And the state of Alaska and its citizens have an important protection of their interests in their water resources against federal overreach.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUS Cast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.